Hello, my dear listeners. You found your way to Counter Melody, and I couldn't be more delighted to welcome you to my podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Gundlach, and I'm here to present to you the finest exponents, both renowned and less well-known, of the art of song. I don't know how you feel about this, but sometimes I feel as if the world has turned completely upside down. And in a strange way, I guess that's part of the reason I'm still here putting out this podcast. Even and especially in these difficult times, I believe that the artists presented here may brighten our path with their luminous voices and inspire us on our search for a better future. And now, this week's episode. Hello, my friends, and welcome to this week's iteration of the Counter Melody podcast. As most of you know, I'm back in New York for a couple weeks, and my goodness, what an active week it has been weather-wise. First, severe storms and flash flooding, then an earthquake, and yesterday, the eclipse, which of course was not just in New York, but it was a sight to behold. It was also quite a week for Counter Melody because, much to my surprise, the podcast was mentioned in the New York Times obituary of Margaret Tynes. Well, you could have knocked me over with a feather, as I sometimes say. I couldn't have been more honored and more pleased, especially because that reference in the New York Times was to what I think was one of my most important episodes. As you know, there's very little that is more important to me than to help promote the legacy of important artists, in particular, but not exclusively, artists of color. What pleased me at least as much as the mention in the Times was the fact that Margaret Tynes's nephew reached out to me because of the episode I did on his aunt. So thank you, Richard, for our wonderful written conversation. Whatever I can do to promote the legacy of your extraordinary aunt, please know that sort of work is among my most important concerns regarding the podcast. Also, I should mention that the more time that I am able to devote to the podcast, the wider the scope of the episodes will be. I have been swamped lately with these freelance projects that are not particularly dear to my heart, but that I have to do to keep my head above water. So I would like to mention in that regard that I have gained 2 new Patreon supporters this week, for which I am exceedingly grateful. Both Louis and Jing Yu have become supporters, and I'm very grateful for that. I did put out a few bonus episodes last week, and there will be more to come, and those are available to all of my Patreon subscribers. And if you want to join Louis and Jing Yu, please go to patreon.com/countermelody, and you too can become a supporter of the podcast on either a yearly or a monthly basis. I think that's it for housekeeping issues. Now let us celebrate the birthday of a singer that I have held close to my heart for, well, many decades now. She's introduced in this live 1983 clip by Miss Leontine Price and Maestro James Levine.
Maybe if I change from Maestro and I'm allowed to say Jimmy, you will answer a question for me.
Naturally.
Surely you found at least some room for sopranos in your program.
You bet we have. From Florida, Marvis Martin. And when my unique artistic administrator, Joan Ingpen, first heard her, she came back and said to me, I really think this is something special. And when I heard her, I agreed 100%. Here was a girl with a voice of really exceptional beauty and an incredible gift for communication. And she's already now sung several roles with us, including Pamina and the Magic Flute. And I think she has the most marvelous future coming, not only in opera, but also in concert and recital repertoire.
That's wonderful. Hers is truly an exceptional voice. And I think she's chosen the perfect aria for today. Depuis le jour from the opera Louise. Although Louise has not been done at the Met for quite a long time, it certainly through the years has been a great favorite of all sopranos. And I think it's one of the most beautiful love songs ever written. Here now is Marvis Martin.
Yes, that was the marvelous Marvis Martin. And she was here singing a truncated version, thanks to the magic of editing, of an aria that I first heard her sing when I was a graduate student at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. In the late 80s, she came and did a recital at the Krannert Center, and I remember the first half of the program ended with her singing Depuis le jour. It was memorable. That floated B, I can practically still hear it in my mind. In fact, you guys just heard it now on that performance that was part of a live White House concert in the year 1983. April 7th was Marvis Martin's birthday. I've had a bunch of other episodes on the back burner at present, but I dropped everything when I realized that this would be the perfect opportunity to pay tribute to a singer that I have loved and cherished for so many years, and one who really didn't leave all that many commercial recordings. Thanks to the bounties of YouTube, and in particular, the YouTuber Kato Guy, we have a wealth of Marvis Martin material. I'd also like to call out Kenneth Overton, who during the months of lockdown, during the height of the pandemic, did a wonderful series of interviews with iconic Black performers. And his interview with Marvis Martin was one of the highlights of that series. In fact, I got a lot of biographical information from there as well. So if you would like to give that a listen, I highly recommend it. I'll put the link for that on the show notes page of the podcast, which you can find at countermelodypodcast.com. Okay? Now let's see what Daniel has on the agenda for today's birthday tribute. Ah, yes. The next item that I'm going to offer is Marvis Martin singing the role of Clara in Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. She sang that at the Met in the first production the work received in that house. A few years after that, she also appeared in a live concert at the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam of Porgy. And that was led by Henry Lewis, another black icon, and if you are a fan of Marilyn Horne, also the former husband of that mezzo-soprano. I'm going to play you a little bit of Summertime because Marvis has one of the most gorgeous versions of that around, and she sang it on many occasions. From that live performance in Amsterdam, I'm going to play the second act reprise of Summertime that happens during the storm scene. It's a very short excerpt, but it ends on a glorious high B that simply shimmers off into the night. I mentioned that Marvis made very few studio recordings, and while we are grateful for the few that she left, I only can say that I wish that she had done more. But in 1992, she teamed up with the violinist and conductor Jean-Jacques Cantoreau to record a selection of the Canteloube Chant d'Auvergne. I did a full episode on the Chant d'Auvergne last fall, and I did include an excerpt from this very interesting recording. Cantoreau, first of all, is leading the Orchestre d'Auvergne, so we're going right to the source, as it were. But also, these are arrangements of the Joseph Canteloube originals done by Jean-Guy Pailly. So it's a slightly different twist on those Canteloube arrangements. And we're going to listen to the song La Pastorelletta e lo Cibali. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The Shepherdess and the Lad. It's a very lively arrangement and it's full of character. And you see that, yes, Marvis Martin was an exquisite singer, but she's also one who possesses a wonderful sense of characterization and a beautiful sense of humor. Lucavrioso sul mare, pastoretto. Lucavrioso sul mare, pastoretto. Ne cadrò mi proso il letto ci balè. Ne cadrò mi proso il letto rosa violet. In usiere non lo prego, Oh, It was just recently Easter, and for those of you who celebrate, I'd like to offer just one further tribute, and that is from Handel's Messiah, the wonderful aria, I Know That My Redeemer Liveth. This is a live performance that Marvis Martin gave with the Detroit Symphony in 1992 under the baton of James Paul. I just want to say a couple things about this. This is a very old school style of Handel performance. It's one that I have dubbed in previous episodes full-figured Baroque. Get it? Figured, bass, full-figured, ha ha ha. But what Marvis offers, she puts ornaments and things like this that do what ornamentation is supposed to do. It highlights certain phrases, points certain words. One hears in this performance the fervor of her faith. It's a lovely, lovely thing to hear. And it beautifully straddles both of those worlds of Baroque performance practice and what I have termed full-figured Baroque style. This is true whatever your religious convictions are. In fact, I'm reminded of that line from Cher's Walking in Memphis.
He said, "Tell me, are you a Christian child?" And I said, "Man, I am tonight."
I think there's only one other singer that can so move me to have that kind of reaction, and that is Mahalia Jackson, and that is high praise indeed. In that interview with Kenneth Overton, Marvis mentions that during the years of her solo career, that she tried to balance opera, concert work, and recitals. She also speaks about how words and conveying the meaning of those words was always of utmost importance to her in her singing career. And when somebody makes a statement like that, you know that they're going to be on my list of fabulous artists. From her New York recital debut in December 1981, here is an unaccompanied version of the spiritual "There's a Man Going Round Taking Names." I was going to say words cannot express, but words do express the depth of feeling that this spiritual conjures up. When I listen to Marvis Martin, I'm reminded to some extent of the lyric soprano Veronica Tyler. She was one of my so-called forgotten divas that I featured during Black History Month this past February. Now, Veronica Tyler had a slightly different weight of voice, but she and Marvis did share quite a bit of repertoire. There's also an incredible, passionate commitment to the words from both of these singers. And it's not surprising that both of these women excelled in the music of both Handel and Mozart. And in fact, I found some wonderful treasured relics of Marvis Martin in both Handel and Mozart, and I'm going to treat us all to a couple brief excerpts. Let's return to that wonderful combo of Marvis Martin and George Friedrich Handel. We heard them together, if you will, a few minutes ago in that excerpt from Messiah. Here is a performance that she gave with Charles Mackerras leading the Orchestra of St. Luke's at Carnegie Hall in a series of concert performances of Handel operas that were being produced for the tricentennial of Handel's birth. In the first of that series, Orlando was featured, and it starred Marilyn Horne, Valerie Masterson, Jeffrey Gall, and Marvis Martin in the role of the shepherdess Dorinda. We've already heard several examples that feature the voice of Marvis Martin at its most plangent, at its most expressive, at its most exquisite. I'd like to offer this as a counter, sort of as we heard with the Cantaloube, a little bit of a contrast showing a different side of her artistic personality. This is the third act aria, Amore qual vento, which gives her an opportunity to again display her playfulness and her facility with moving her voice all over the place. The audience clearly enjoyed her performance. Now we're going to hear a couple Mozart excerpts. She sang principal roles at the Met for a number of years, including Pamina, and Mozart was a staple of her repertoire, both in operatic and in concert roles. There are two extant performances of Marvis Martin performing the Mozart Great Mass in C minor in Chicago. First is from Ravinia in 1982, in which she performed under the baton of her mentor, James Levine. And we're going to hear a performance from Symphony Hall a couple years later in the fall of 1985, in which she sings the same part under the baton of Georg Scholti. This is an excerpt from the Et Incarnatus Est, which is surely one of Mozart's most exquisite creations. The soprano who undertakes this part must have absolutely flawless technique, but also a strong musical sense of how this music needs to unfold. And my goodness, if Marvis Martin does not display both of those much needed characteristics. Career in the early 1980s unfolded with great ease and naturalness, going from one success to another. She won a number of really significant competitions. She was a member of the very first class of young artists at the Met in 1982. And from there, her international career unfolded again with great ease. In the fall of 1983, she participated in a performance, I believe it was a concert performance, of Mozart's Idomeneo, singing the role of Ilia, and singing it as if to the manner born. She has the feel for it, and each of those arias is done just exquisitely. But I'm going to play something rather special for you. The version of Idomeneo that was done in this performance used the version in which Idamante is sung not by a mezzo-soprano, but by a tenor. And in the third act, we finally have an encounter between Ilia and Idamante, and it yielded, in the soprano mezzo version, an absolutely gorgeous duet. But I'm going to offer you a variant here, because in this case, the tenor was none other than my late friend Jerry Hadley. And I'm so thrilled to offer you this alternate version of the duet between Ilia and Idamante. It also allows us to hear just how revolutionary the structure of Idomeneo is, in that it unfolds in a very non-static way. We encounter this over and over and over in this opera. For an opera seria, this is quite revolutionary. Let us listen now to Marvis and Jerry sing this gorgeous duet from the third act of Idomeneo, beginning with the playout of her aria Zeffiretti Lusinghieri, going directly into the recitative, which begins with her exclamation, E stesso vien, as the deeper emotions and the possibility of reconciliation appear on the horizon. The full orchestra takes over the accompaniment of the recitative, which then flows directly into the cantilena portion of the duet. Spiegarti non possio.
Yeah.
Now let's listen to a few more of Marvis Martin's concert selections. Again, there have been some wonderful appearances on YouTube of Marvis Martin in recital. The sound on some of these is not great, but in that New York recital debut, from which we heard There's a Man Going Around Taking Names, she also performed a number of beautiful songs, including the Richard Strauss cycle Nettchenblumen, in which she is joined by the pianist Gary Ledet, with whom she worked for many years. This is the final song of the cycle, Wasserrose, Water Lily. I mentioned that there were very few commercially released examples of Marvis Martin's singing. But there was an issue of live recordings from the Spoleto Festival in the summer of 1987. And from that, we're going to hear an excerpt from Ned Roram's Cycle of Holy Songs, Psalm 148, Praise Ye the Lord, in which Marvis is joined by the pianist Jeffrey Kahane.
Praise him, all his angels, praise him, all his angels.
I'm going to refer back to that online interview with Kenneth Overton. Here's something really interesting about Marvis Martin. She gave her final performance at the Met as a soloist in the year 1990, but then subsequently she became a member of the Met Opera Chorus, where she remains to this day, an anchor in the soprano section. That is a career in opera that has lasted for more than 40 years. But during these years that she has been a member of the chorus, she's really experienced a different side of the business, and one in which you have to work just as hard, if not harder, than when you are an international soloist. Her modesty, her practicality, her devotion to the art form, and to being the best artist that she could possibly be, no matter in what context she was performing, has moved me so deeply. You know, no matter how you slice it, taking on chorus work after having had an international career as a soloist is not something that every singer can take on. I submit to you that it is only the most exceptional artist that can actually do this and find as much meaning in their work as a chorister as they did when they were a soloist. Marvis Martin is not the only member of the Met Chorus who has also sung major roles on stage there, but she is probably the most prominent and, I suspect, also one of the longest-standing members of the chorus that fits into that category. Now, one thing that is absolutely crucial to being able to do this kind of work is the ability to set aside the inflated ego. According to Marvis, she wanted to be with her daughter and her husband as her daughter was growing up. And that became a more important thing for her than the glories, if you will, associated with a solo career. Because not only are there glories, there are also difficulties. As those of us who attempted to pursue international careers know all too well. Now, when I first went over to Germany to do auditions in the year 1999, I had an offer to join a small vocal ensemble, and my ego simply couldn't accept that offer of performing as a member of an ensemble rather than as a soloist. Well, that group went on to great fame, and I often wonder what form my life would have taken if I had said yes to that opportunity. But on that interview, Marvis also speaks about the many rewards that she discovered as a member of the Met Chorus. And for that, as we say in German, Hut ab, I doff my hat to her. Through that choice and through that decision, she simply earns even greater respect from me. And it's wonderful to see that her career as a soloist is still remembered and celebrated. And that, of course, is one of the primary reasons that I do this podcast. So I am pleased to remind my listeners of the wonderful things that she achieved as a soloist. Now, I have a few more live performances of Marvis Martin with which to round off this episode. They're all with orchestra, but they represent the three prongs, if you will, of her career, the three aspects of her career: opera, concert, and recital. So let's first go to concert repertoire. Here is a live performance of Felix Mendelssohn's Elijah that she gave with the Cleveland Orchestra in 1992 under the baton of, pardon my mangling of the name, Zsa Zsa Ling. This is the second part of the Hear Ye Israel solo that opens part two of the oratorio. Thus saith the Lord, I am he that comforteth.
Thus saith the Lord, the Redeemer of Israel, and his Holy One to him is in my tyrants.
From the year 1990, I have an excerpt from a concert performance at Carnegie Hall of Tchaikovsky's Maid of Orleans, which Eve Queller presented with the Opera Orchestra of New York, and how many wonderful evenings of concert performances of less well-known operas we experienced because of her intrepidity and industry. So this was The Maid of Orleans, as I said, and it featured the great Dolores Zajic in the title role, and in the secondary role of the king's mistress Agnes was none other than Marvis Martin. And in Act Two, she sang this arioso of Agnes that absolutely stopped the show. This performance took place on the 28th of February, 1990. Now, I have two excerpts of Marvis Martin singing American concert repertoire. First, from Aaron Copland's orchestration of his Emily Dickinson cycle, here is There Came a Wind Like a Bugle. He orchestrated only 8 of these, and interestingly, when they were premiered, they were sung by none other than another of February's forgotten divas, Gwendolyn Killebrew. These Dickinson poems are most generally undertaken primarily by mezzo-sopranos, but here's an opportunity to hear how Marvis Martin's voice developed into a more substantial instrument, if you will. This is a live performance with the Cleveland Orchestra, conducted by Vladimir Ashkenazi. Has gone on the record as saying that one of the works with which she most closely identified was Samuel Barber's Knoxville, Summer of 1915. And lucky us, because on that same Cleveland Orchestra concert from which we just heard the Copland, she also performed that incredible, what is it? Is it an orchestral song? Is it an aria? I don't know. It's a unique piece, and one of the things that makes it so indelible is that text by James Agee. It's such an intimate portrait, but it's also a philosophical meditation. And the way that A.G. and Barber zoom in and out from these intimate pictures of the people depicted to the entirety of human experience. It's just so mind-bogglingly beautiful and moving. We're going to hear just a portion that begins with the words, "On the rough, wet grass of the backyard."
What is the artist?
And to conclude today's birthday tribute, I'd like to present to you Marvis Martin in a live performance with the Minnesota Orchestra under the baton of Libor Peschek, performing the exquisite Glück, das mir verblieb, Marietta's Lied, from Erich Korngold's now standard rep opera, Die Tote Stadt. Even before Die Tote Stadt was being performed more widely, this aria was always a popular excerpt. When it occurs in the original version of the opera, it's actually a duet, but it works so wonderfully as a free standing piece for soprano, and occasionally I've actually also heard it sung by tenor alone. I don't know the exact date. The date of this performance was not noted on the YouTube excerpt, and it required a little bit of cleaning up because there were some dropped channels and things like that. But oh my goodness, I'm so pleased to offer this to you as the ultimate tribute to the great artist and human being, Marvis Martin. Happy belated birthday from all of your many admirers and fans. Thank you. my dear friends, keep the song in your hearts. I'm Daniel Gundlach.